Welcome to the Real Estate Mogul Podcast, where you'll learn how to leverage investing strategies in your real estate business. Featuring in-depth masterminds with experts on real estate sales, investing, wealth building, and lead generation. With each episode, you'll build a toolbox of strategies for generating motivated seller leads and giving them out-of-the-box options to reach their goals while putting more money in your pocket. And now, here's your host, Tom Caffarella.
All right, welcome everybody to the Real Estate Mogul Podcast. I am super excited to have on as a guest, Justin Colby out of Arizona. Welcome, Justin.
What's going on, dude? Thanks for having me.
Man, I read through your bio, and rather than mess everything up, I mean, you do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So can you do me a favor and just kind of give the listeners a very, very high level overview of what you've done in the past and kind of Sure. what you're focused on now?
Yeah. So started back in 2007. I started actually as a licensed realtor. I just didn't enjoy the game. So when the market crashed, I got out of that. Not only did I get out of that, I lost it all while getting out of it, right? So lost my house, lost my $90,000 car, lost all of it. So I had to rebuild myself. And so in 2007, I started in the real estate investing world here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those things that the banks didn't know what was going on. We didn't know what was going on, but we were going to make it happen. So over the last, going on 10 years now, I've done well over 650 flips. About half of those are wholesale. About half of those are regular rehab flips, fix and flips.
Yep.
Started developing back in 2013. And if you've never been in the developing game, I caution you because it's...
Absolutely. We've just started doing a couple in the past couple of years. And we're like, man, this was not what we thought it was going to be.
Right, right.
And easier money on the fix and flips, right?
Yeah, way easier.
Yeah.
It was, it's all about who you're doing business with. And I had some people that were involved in the deal that were not people that I would ever do business again with. And you kind of learn that the hard way. And so got into that game, ended up selling not only all the units we built, but then ended up selling the remainder of the land rather than trying to fight through the minutiae of continuing. And got right back into what we do best, which is wholesale and rehab, fix and flip, and been crushing it again ever since. And what else? And obviously I have a book out on Amazon. I have a podcast myself called The Science of Flipping on iTunes. And I've helped, if not several thousand people get into this industry and make their first check or even potentially, fire their boss and go full time and all that kind of stuff. So definitely fills a purpose.
So how did you lose it all? Like going back to 2007, were you fixing and flipping then, or you were just an agent and you just couldn't get any business at that point?
I was just an agent and the market tanked. Right. And I was,
yep.
Riding high off new home sales, crushing it, making a ton of money, and everything changes. Right. And all of a sudden your income goes away, but your overhead doesn't, which is always the case. Right.
Yep.
And I was done. I mean, literally, I was throwing good money at a bad investment. My personal home, which was a $500,000 condo, immediately went down 50%, right? Mm-hmm. So I bought it at 500 grand. It immediately became 250 grand. Mm-hmm. I'm throwing a $500,000 loan mortgage payment every month at something that's not even worth that anymore. Mm-hmm. I have a $90,000 Lexus. So I was just a statistic, right? I was a statistic of what happened during those times.
Did you know what was going on, or did you have really no idea yourself at the time?
I somewhat understood it, but I was still very naive. I mean, at the time, I think I was 26, so I didn't really understand all the mortgage-backed security and what was truly, truly happening. I know I had a couple friends that were in the subprime business and they were just crushing it. And I knew that wasn't right. I was like, there's something wrong for you to be able to move this many loans in this sector of the loan world. Right.
Yep.
And so I kind of knew, but I also was very kind of like, I didn't know how long it was going to last versus, how it was going to blow.
Right. So let me ask you this, something I ask every guest that's super successful. How is this time different? How is 2017 different than 2007?
Yeah, I'm way more aware. And I have a lot more I have more of a pulse on what's going on with the real estate economy than I did then, right? So I was also, all the money I made was, I was a statistic of the good time. I didn't do anything special. I wasn't smarter than any other agent, or I literally fell into new home sales. We were crushing it. I was an order taker, quite frankly.
Yep.
Right. And so I didn't have it. I was an order taker. So I just didn't know what I didn't know. It was, you know, and when things are rolling that good, you kind of just, why do I need to know anything? I'm making hand over fist money, pretty much just taking orders. Mm-hmm. And now I have my finger on the pulse. I don't have a crystal ball, so I couldn't tell you, you know, in the next 12 months, this is going to happen. I think there's some things out there that are looming. I think the auto industry is going to play a very large part into what happens with our economy. But, you know, with what's going on politically, what's going on with the hurricanes, what's going on with just, I mean, the world right now is so up in arms, is the way I kind of look at it. And there's so much going on, so much tragedy, so much stuff that, you know, I think I'm just a lot more cautious now. I'm not just, you know, throwing around money. And I try to be very intentional with the homes we rehab flip versus the ones that we wholesale, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to be, you know, $5 million into rehabs right this second. But if there's a great flip, doesn't mean I'm going to pass on it either. So
when you're talking about 50% of them you wholesale versus 50% you fix and flip, what is that determining factor that determines you want to fix and flip this particular property versus wholesale something else?
Just math. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if I can't make six figures on a rehab flip, it's just not worth my doing because of a lot of different factors. But one thing I do a lot is wholetail. I don't know if you've heard that term.
Yep.
I have a product on teaching people how to wholetail, because it's similar to rehabbing, but you're not rehabbing. It's similar to wholesaling, but you're not wholesaling, right? You actually have to get money and buy the home. That model right now is a very popular model because the industry's on fire, right? It's a seller's market no matter where you go. So doesn't it behoove us to actually have more properties to sell?
I think wholetailing right now is the most profitable niche.
Absolutely.
I mean, in my market it is, because at the end of the day, there's just such little inventory on the market. And so for those of you who are unfamiliar with the process of wholetailing, what it is, all right, so wholesaling is when you buy a property, you don't take title to it, and then you sell that contract to somebody else. Fixing and flipping is when you take that property, you fully renovate it, and then you sell it to a retail buyer. And wholetailing is when you actually take title to the property. You may do a little bit of work. Do you recommend doing a little bit of work or nothing at all?
Property specific. I mean, yep. If the home's built in 2005 and pretty much doesn't need anything, then I'm going to make sure it looks pretty. I'm going to clean it out and be done. If it's a little bit older, then yeah, I might throw $2,500, $5,000 into it and just make it nicer.
But what we're seeing in our market is when you wholetail something, you're almost getting the same price as a fix and flip.
Are you seeing? Exactly right.
And the reason we're seeing that is because of the lack of inventory. So unfortunately, when somebody in a market right now can, let's say that they're capped at $400,000, they may only have three houses to choose from. And when they only have three houses to choose from, guess what? Our property that's pretty nice, but not perfect, becomes the only available option. And so that's why in this particular market, just economically, that's why it works. So when you're doing you do 50% complete wholesale, you're not taking title. And then out of the 50% that you're closing on, what percentage is wholetail versus, you know, going balls to the wall, fix and flip?
Well, I think just to clarify, I think over the years, I've done about 50-50 wholesale, rehab, flip, and some wholetailing, right?
Yep.
Right now, I'd say I'm predominantly 90% wholesaling. Well, 85% wholesaling, 10% wholetailing, and whatever, 5% rehabbing. Like right now, I have one rehab deal going on. It's going to be awesome. But we're not taking down a lot of those because it's a $150,000 rehab, right? And so there's a lot of money that goes out to go get that deal, but the income that's based off that is 20%, right? So that's, well, 120% really. So it's a mess right now. I'm saying about 10% wholetail, 5% rehab, and 85% wholesale.
So you're talking about doing things smarter this time than the last time. And I think one of the things you just hit on is like you're wholesaling a lot and you're not taking on that market risk, right?
Correct. Correct.
So you're not taking on the market risk in a market that isn't that far away from changing.
Right. And Phoenix traditionally is kind of the heartbeat or the pulse of kind of what happens, right?
Like, yeah, you guys go first, right?
Every time. So
why is that?
Very aware. You know, I don't know. It's a very transient city. It's an affordable city.
Yep.
There's major sports teams here, right? So we have all of the major sports teams. 9 months out of the year, you can't beat the weather 9 months out of the year because it's beautiful. All winter long, all fall long, all spring long. The summers, yes, are hot, but they're not unbearable because there's always air conditioning everywhere. You know, unbelievable golf courses. There's a good little economy here, right? And then on top of it, like relative to California, our tax brackets are different, right? So I save roughly 12 to 15% on taxes. If I took my same income and brought that into California, I'd be north of 50% on taxes, which is nuts.
Right. But so, you know, Phoenix is a great area to live, but why do you guys fall first? Like, there was probably a good 18-month gap between Phoenix falling and Boston falling.
Yep.
And it's a weird thing. Did you guys start to go, when did you guys start to go back up roughly? Like, what year did you guys really start to?
13.
13.
I mean, we've been on a run for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Our numbers are back to where they should have been. If there was never an up and a down and the economy just stood going normal 5% forever, our numbers are back there now.
Yeah, right. We're probably about at that same too. And we basically started to come back around 2013 as well.
Yeah.
And you guys also fall harder too. Like, we didn't go down, you know, you said you lost 50% in how long of a period of time?
Freaking 3 months.
Yeah. So in Boston, for whatever reason, we just go slow. Like, we go slow up, we go slow down. We don't vacillate, you know, quite as much, but I mean, that's just market specific. So
yeah. And I would say part of it is there's a lot of money in Phoenix, meaning like the hedge funds, right?
Yes. So yeah,
they came in and they change our market way more volatile than a Boston. And the reason being is the homes are newer. It's an expansive city, right? So they can come in and get good rental portfolios, yep, but they'll pay way more than you or I would simply because they need to make less yield, right? Yep. So when you and I want to make a yield of 8%, 10%, they'll make a yield of 4 to 6. Mm-hmm. Well, now they're paying way more, which is changing the market. And then it's not sustainable because they're the only ones that have, you know, $60 million to spend every single month. Mm-hmm. So when they slow down or they stop, it changes everything, right? So the fluctuation doesn't even happen because of always the loans, or it happens because the players in the industry, right? They're coming in and crushing us in terms of price per deal that they're willing to spend. And then when they stop or slow down, well, everyone else has to pay because they're artificially inflating, mm-hmm, and you start to lose at the end of that, right? So Boston, to my knowledge, isn't a heavily...
No, you know why? Because, like, are you talking about... You're talking about single families, right? That,
yeah,
that you can buy... See, in Boston, we're too expensive to cash flow.
Right.
Like, even, you know, you would have had to come in... Our rock bottom was like 2010, 2011.
Yep.
That's probably the only time where you could have came into Boston single families and maybe cash flowed. And even then, you would have only made a couple bucks. So you can't make money doing that here. So we never, I remember during the last crash, people were talking about hedge funds coming in. And I was like, man, what the hell is going on? I never see that. But now, you know, that I'm a little bit more experienced, I know the economics of why. But yeah, we don't see it at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Boston's also unique, not to go too much into, you know, market specific stuff, but we don't have a lot of land and they are really, really strict upon new construction.
Sure.
And where you guys are, right, like, you have more space to kind of develop.
Yep.
I know obviously building, like you mentioned in the onset, is a pain, but you guys still have physical land to do it. Like, whereas we don't have a lot more land.
Right.
And even the land we do have, it's brutal to get anything done here politically. So,
no doubt.
So talk a little bit about, you're doing tons of volume, right? So how are you finding all these great deals?
I do a lot of direct mail marketing.
Yep.
And that has, kind of a point of, you can only reach so many people and keep it profitable, right? So right now we have a 3x return on our direct mail marketing, but then you include cold calling, which is a big portion of what has become so profitable for us here, because we basically take a list, whether it's from our title company, List Source, you know, Find Motivated Sellers Now, we skip trace the phone numbers and we start calling people just saying, hey, are you interested in selling?
Who is we? Because I can't picture Justin Colby making these calls. Not that you couldn't, but I don't think you do.
Right.
Who's
so we have three people in the office here. And then I have a business partner that runs an office in Mesa that he has five more people there. Right. Awesome. And so we have a total of eight, rocking and rolling, and the profit margins there are so much better because you're paying them a small percentage of the deals that get done. Right. And so we call those, you know, lead managers. I don't even like using the word manager because they're not managing anything.
Yeah.
But lead positions. And then we have like acquisition managers who actually will go contract the deal. Two different roles. One person gets us in the door. The other person physically gets in the door and negotiates the deal. Mm-hmm. Right. And so those are our main ways of going right now. I've toyed with pay-per-click Google advertising. The cost is astronomical.
It's insane where you are right now. It varies all over the market. Like again, the price, you know, what's working really, really well is Facebook right now.
Okay.
It's something, you know,
me for sellers,
Good. Working very well. I think it's only a matter of time before it gets to the pay-per-click level, but a lot of people aren't doing it right now. So, so what you mentioned, like everybody does mailers, not a lot of people do cold calling. We do a bunch of cold calling as well, and it works really well, but not a lot of people do it because you have to actually manage the people.
Yep.
And like the traditional kind of mom and pop investor can't manage that person.
Correct.
Right. And they don't know, they don't even know how to train them anyways. So, you toyed with, did you try pay-per-click and just got
for a better part of a year?
And your cost per lead was crazy high, right?
Unbelievable. I mean,
three,
it was
400, 500. What are we talking?
Cost per lead got into 800. And I think cost per deal was like almost $8,000. And I was just like, this doesn't model, right?
Because
especially if we're going to wholesale, it doesn't math out. Now, if we're going to rehab and flip them and only do big, okay, I can understand a certain level of them. But direct mail was always like $300 a lead, you know, $2,500 to $3,000 a deal. Mm-hmm. I will take those numbers over PPC every time because it's half, right?
Yep. So on the mailers right now, have you kind of maxed out your market? Like,
Yeah. I think we're at a, diminishing return.
That's where we're at too. And, so Mesa is considered a different metro than you, right?
No, it's all the same.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's all the same. That's 20 minutes away from me. So Phoenix is Phoenix, right? Just like Boston's Boston, but I used to live in Beacon Hill, actually in Boston.
Okay.
So, but you have all the little sub cities in Boston, but everyone just says I live in Boston. I mean,
yep.
Right. So same thing. Mesa is a part of Phoenix. Gilbert is a part of Phoenix. Chandler is a part of Phoenix. You know, Tempe is a part of Phoenix.
Yep. So, so what have you done? So you've maxed out your mailers. Have you maxed out your calls?
No, we're looking at actually increasing that. Actually, we're looking at bringing more people on. And I know, you know, this model very, very well, in figuring out how many can we actually get into the door with a low lead cost, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of deals. So no, I think, you know, our guys are making 300 calls a day. That's their quota.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for every 1,000 leads to have one deal. So if a guy has given 1,000 phone numbers, there's a deal in there. That's like the baseline.
Yep.
Can there be more? 100%. But the baseline is 1,000 equals one.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have eight people calling, 300 calls a day, you start to just simply do the math, right? So it only takes roughly 3 days to a week for one person to get a call.
So
for a deal.
For the people who are on that, you know, it sounds overwhelming to kind of manage somebody doing the cold calls because it is.
And it is. It's a management, speaking frankly, it's a management nightmare, right? It's just complete management. Managing people, managing their expectations, managing the numbers, right? So, yeah, I mean.
It's too bad that you can't just go all, you know, double your mailers because mailing, you know, you click a button and the marketing's done.
Yeah. But then there's a, you know, so we're sending out just under 100,000 mail pieces a month. Yep. And that's just the point of diminishing returns. We're not working the leads effectively. So what I always go back to telling people is you're in a marketing and sales business. You're not in real estate. Mm-hmm. You're buying and selling real estate, but you're not in real estate. You're in marketing and sales. And the better marketer you are, then the better ability you have on selling, meaning negotiating with sellers and finding buyers, that's the game you're in. And so you need to figure out, don't just send 200,000 letters if you're one person. You'll never effectively work those leads.
Yeah.
So there's always
I have people I talk to all the time. They're like, you know, I'll give them like a recommended budget and they want to do triple that. I'm like, you can't process the leads. You'll lose money because you can't effectively actually manage the amount of calls you're going to get.
Agreed 100%.
Yeah. So you're doing, tell us though about the process of mailing, managing that caller. Like, do you have one specific person who's managing all the dialers? How does that look?
Yeah. Right now we do. We have one guy and he manages the dialers and the people and the matrix, right? So we have a spreadsheet that says you made this many calls, you had this many contacts, because Mojo Sells, as you know, delivers that very, very easily. Mm-hmm. Out of these contacts, you converted this into an appointment. Out of these appointments, these how many deals you got, right? So we have them manage those matrix. And if people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, it's his role to say, hey, why did you make 122 calls today? What was the deal? But then you see his talk time being incredibly high. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, how many appointments did you pull out of that, right? So then it's just a management of numbers. I always talk about math, right? It just goes back to math. You just run the math and you can manage to the numbers. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. So one guy manages that. We basically, I for the most part kind of manage direct mail just because it's somewhat of a...
How did you get that role? So you got the other guys managing the hard part, you're managing the direct mail. How did that come about?
Well, quite frankly, even my business partner truly manages the numbers,
really? I'm always kind of looking at
it. Yeah. It's my role of the company, right? So I'm the visionary.
Yeah.
I'm not the implementer. I go create opportunities. Like, I went and had a great meeting this weekend and sat down and opened up an opportunity for some financial tools to be implemented into my kind of coaching, and that will bring in more revenue. So the idea I'm bringing to you is I'm not the implementer, not in the weeds, but yes. I will look at the weeds and I'll navigate the company through the weeds and then create opportunity for us to get out of the weeds, right? And, you know, running. Cause if we can put some systems to my vision, then it becomes just a rinse and repeat every single day. And that's really where we've gotten to at this point is I can create the vision and now it's a system of rinse and repeat.
Yeah. So it's funny because I've got the same arrangement. So I've got a business partner and I'm in the same role as you are.
Yeah.
Right. So he always says to me, like, you're the one that's creating problems. Right. So it's my job to create the problems, right? It's my job to create the work. So if I don't create the work, there is no work and, you know, no one makes money.
Yeah.
But, you know, he still hates me for it anyways.
Of course. That's their role. They hate us because we always dump. Here's what I do. I'm a classic fork. I walk by my business partner's office. I'll yell a great idea and be like, hey, we need to get this started so we can do X, Y, and Z. And I just keep going. And he's like, what do I do with that? Right. Cause I just give him the idea and then he has to manage it. And so he's like, oh my God, you're killing me. And that's just a constant thing.
So have you tracked, your cost per acquisition mailers versus cold calling, and which one is better right now?
Oh, cold calling, like by a landslide. We're talking about like $400 cost per acquisition to what did I just say it was? $3,500 or something like that.
And what is your take for why that is? I know I've got my opinion on it, but.
Well, the cost of direct mail is high and the callback return is low.
Yep.
Right. And so if I'm spending 40 to 50 grand a month, that's great. But then the callback ratio is lowered because there's so many people, you know, competition doing it. So everyone here in Phoenix gets 35 letters.
Yep.
So, right. And then because the market's so hot, the sellers are getting more knowledgeable. They know more what the house is worth because there's so many sales going on. All they have to do is look at Zillow now and Zillow is getting better.
Yep.
So it's a combination of all of it, right? Which spikes the cost. Mm-hmm. And then always working on conversion with our sales guys. The guys over the phone, I mean, what Mojo cost me less than $200 a month for all of the tools.
Yeah.
And then you know, it's a matter of just getting the lead guy to make a small little percentage. My acquisition guy makes a small little percentage, and that's my cost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So I pay people hourly. Okay. So I love the fact that you basically do it, you know, a cut of the deal. I think that's awesome. How long did it take you to sign on people that were willing to do it for a commission only?
This is part of the management nightmare, right? Because it's basically like a spin wheel. They're just in and out, and you just got to hire. I mean, it's a hiring job.
The thing I say about cold calling is like, it's a job that it's nobody's dream job, right?
Right.
So they're always going to be looking for a way out. Most people. I mean, there are some people who, you know, they like talking on the phone and they don't mind doing it. But for the most part, that's the issue, right? Because a lot of people, it's not their dream job. Even if they're making decent money at it, it's not really what they want to do. So it can be tough. But on the cold calling side, I think at the end of the day, it boils down to the fact that like, you get those, every seller is getting those 35 letters, but they're not getting 35 calls.
Correct. Right?
So you might be the, you know, one of maybe one or two or three. I heard a strategy from somebody I had on the podcast recently that they don't mail, but they call and say, did you get my letter? Because they know that they're getting a letter, right?
Right.
And so they look at it like, well, look, if they're getting 30, you know, whatever, 10, 20, 30 letters, and I'm the one who calls, they're going to be like, wow, that's the person who's really putting in, not necessarily putting in the effort, because a seller is not going to think like that, but they may be able to make that actual like face to face, you know, like personal connection.
Correct.
So those two are working. Yeah. PPC is crazy. Is there anything else that's working for you now on the lead gen side?
Do what others aren't, right? So, door knocking still works to this day.
Yep.
And we don't have a huge door knocking. You know, we have a couple guys that kind of work here on an internship basis. We call them minions. They will go and door knock, but it actually still works because you're always going to convert more face to face than you will over the phone. Mm-hmm. So, do what others aren't doing. You don't have to be avant-garde, or you don't have to be so contrarian that you're so far ahead of the curve and you created some awesome, crazy new way. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of the old ways that still work today. Bandit signs is another one. Bandit signs still work. I run a mastermind. I run three different masterminds with Kent, Sean, and myself. Mm-hmm. Kent Clothier, Sean Terry, and myself run three different masterminds. We have a group in our middle mastermind that's made over $400,000 this year on bandit signs alone.
Mm.
No direct mail, no PPC, no anything. And that's all their whole business is they made $400,000 on bandit signs, and their cost per deal is way less than $1,000. Right. So it's, do what others aren't is what I would say. You don't have to be contrary in this crazy new something. Just do what people aren't willing to do, and you're always going to win. And I base my success around, I guarantee you're going to quit before me, and I'm banking on it.
Yeah,
I'm going to bank on you're going to give up doing direct mail before I give up doing direct mail. Mm. I'm going to bank that instead of making 300 calls today, you're going to make 100 calls. So I'm just saying I'm going to do what others aren't willing, and I'm going to bank on them not doing it. And every time I win doing that.
So one of the things, the nuggets in there you kind of mentioned is like consistent marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is there any point during the year where you say, well, it's a little bit slower during this time of the year, I'm going to hold up?
Never. You never let go of your marketing because it's a lead gen. You're in marketing and sales. That's our business. So even though, let's just say the holidays tend to be a little slower, mm-hmm. which ironically last year, it was not a little slower. It kept pace with every other month. Mm-hmm. But people will make that, oh, it's the holidays. You're not going to get callbacks as much, or blah, 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 lower your marketing. Yeah. But then what happens when you come out of the holidays, your lead flow isn't there anymore. So now you got to ramp back up, and that takes time. What I've noticed is it roughly takes to ramp marketing up at any significant level. It takes roughly 9 months to ramp it up. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you pause, you pull back, well, now you're back in a ramp up mode. So why don't you just keep it at a certain level that you don't have to ramp up for 9 months? Now, when I say that, I don't want people to get discouraged. Oh, it's going to take me 9 months to get my first deal. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, it's a ramp up period. You can get your first deal in your first marketing, but when you're running a business like mine or like yours, I need to have consistent 10 deals every single month, whether I'm wholetailing them, or rehabbing them, to get back up to that volume of 10 deals is a ramp up period. So that's what I'm really defining for those out there.
So for mailing, people often ask, you know, do you do postcards? Do you do individual letters? Like, does it matter? Like, what's your take on that?
So we've done them all, and I basically have four different mail types that we use. Mm-hmm. We have found the letters are no more better or worse, or postcards no more better or worse. They're all pretty much giving us the same number, meaning callback mm-hmm. ratio. Mm-hmm. So at this point, we just try to use the one that's converted best over the years, right? And it's a letter.
Okay. Even though that, so if you're saying they're kind of the same, postcards are cheaper though, right?
They are cheaper, but not to a significant amount for us, because we're getting letters at roughly 40 or 41 cents. Because I have a local mail guy. I don't go to some big company. He's a local guy here. Mm-hmm. I think postcards are 39 cents.
Oh, wow.
So for us, I like the look of a letter a little bit more. I think postcards scream junk mail.
Yep.
If I'm teaching someone, right, if I were to be teaching your loyal listeners, I'd say, at the end of the day, you want to go as wide as you can, touch as many people as you can, so you can get as many chances for that phone call. So whatever the cheapest route would be is what I would choose. So postcards typically.
Yeah, definitely. And anything specific, like on the outside of the letter, does it look like a traditional letter, or are you one of the people that says, well, it's got to look a certain way or people won't open it?
It's pretty traditional, dude. I mean, it literally is. Yeah. My name's Justin, local cash investor. I saw you own 123 Main Street. Would like to offer you a, you know, win-win offer, right? Whatever. No. And then bullet points, no fees, no commissions, no costs, no hassles.
Sounds to a T what mine is. I think that's, you know, that's the one pretty much everybody uses. What about the exterior of the letter? Anything different there, or just typical?
Just an envelope.
Yeah. I've never found that it matters to get fancy with them. I think the numbers are more important. Like, I think especially for newer investors that have never done a campaign before, a lot of times I feel like they worry about the wrong things. Like, they focus on like what my three letters are going to look like instead of figuring out how I can get 3,000 letters out.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. I call them the masses of asses, right? So I'm going as wide as I can. I'm the fisherman with a big old net, not a fishing pole. Yep. And I want to go after as many as I can, not necessarily deep. The difference being is if you have a rifle, you can go deep. If you have a shotgun, you can go wide. I want the shotgun approach because in my experience in Phoenix, it's all about timing and circumstance right now.
Yep. And you don't know those two things.
And if I go wide, the people who are going after motivation, which would be, you know, divorce, tax liens, pre-foreclosures, all that. If I'm going wide based around my property avatar, I'm getting those people anyways.
Yep. So what do you say to, I mean, the newer people who, you know, going wide isn't in their budget? You know, somebody that's on a shoestring budget, how can you get into this game?
Cold calling all day long. So I created a product called Contacts to Contracts. And I know I'm not here to sell anything, but this is what I created. Teach people how to do it, because it's not difficult. It just takes a little systemization, which we've done now over the years. So you get Mojo Sells, you get a skip tracer, and you start banging that phone. And if, you know, my office's goal is 300 calls per day per person. But if I'm a solopreneur and I'm getting started and I'm listening to this podcast, I'm telling you now, get on there, make 500 calls every single day. You will go get your first deal for less than $200 a month.
Mm-hmm. $200
a month, right?
100%.
So that's
with zero overhead.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Not a bad position to be in.
Right. I mean, if I lost it all today, if something happened, and anything could happen to us, right? Like, we're not invincible. I'm not invincible. If our market takes a dump, I mean, I'm going to have to make some serious changes. I have a full-fledged office here, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I had to make that decision, I would just have my single Mojo dialer and I'd be banked. I would do it because I know I could recreate it. I know I can go get the income.
Hmm.
So for any of you out there, you know, the reason why I created that product, quite frankly, is because the number one question I get asked is what you just asked me. If you were to start all over again, if you had no money, how would you get into this industry? And so I basically built this phone product because that's what I would do. And here's how I do it. And here's the systems I use. And here, go get it, right?
So I have a coaching product, and the coaching product part of it is we're gonna generate the leads for people.
Oh, cool.
And so we do that through a lot of Facebook and Google pay-per-click, depending on what market people are in. And we'll even do some of the cold calling for them, right? But I get people all the time, they don't have the money. So like we want to have, when we work with somebody, we want between a $7,000 and $10,000 budget so that we know we've got like tons of room to get a bunch of leads.
Absolutely.
But we get people that come through the system that, you know, they have $1,000, and that's exactly the advice I give them. I say, look, having money is to start with marketing. It just makes things easier, right? But it doesn't eliminate you from being able to do a deal if you don't have money. You just have to work harder.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, you know, having that marketing budget versus not having that marketing budget, it's going to be harder getting your first deal. But once you start going, you're going to be in the same position as somebody else who had that capital.
100%.
So tell us, I'm interested in that program. So do you mind sharing like what the cost is of that?
Yeah. So it's called Contacts to Contract. Mm-hmm. And it's $597. I priced it to make sure that people could afford it, right? Because to your point, more often than not, it's people who are just kind of getting started and they need something that they can afford. So it literally walks through. I basically did live trainings for 3 straight weeks. Mm-hmm. And I walk through live how to use Mojo correctly, how to download a list, how to upload a list, the scripts I use, what to say, how we set appointments, how we hire people, how we train people. I mean, I literally give it all to you because I truly believe this is the one way. If you're just getting into the industry, or even if it's you and me thinking, what are other lead avenues?
Yep.
This is the way I would tell anybody. Like when I run our masterminds, there's people in there that are making 7 figures a year in their business, and they're still complaining, I don't have enough leads. And I say, dude, get on the phones. I'm telling you now, hire people, get on the phones. Here's, you know, they buy my product for $597 and they're like, oh my God. Right. Cause I teach them how to hire. I teach them what to say. I give them all the scripts. So it legitimately came out of creation of everyone keeps saying,
yeah,
what would you do? Well, that's it.
Mm, awesome.
So again, thescienceflipping.com/C2C, it's $597. I appreciate you mentioning it. I'm not here to sell, but if people are interested, that's the avenue for sure.
No, I like it. I mean, I think it fills a void, right? Cause there's definitely a void there. I mean, a lot of the times, like for me, you know, I'll tell people that you have to cold call, but I don't have a product behind it saying, this is how you do it. For me, it's kind of like, man, I wish I had the time to train you, but I really don't.
Yeah.
So this is what I recommend doing. So I like it. So you've got a big event coming.
We'll work out with it. We'll work out an affiliate plan for you. That way you don't have to go create it.
Awesome. So tell us about your event coming up with Clint, Kent and Sean Terry.
Yeah. So Sean runs an amazing event every year. And the reason why it's so amazing is because it's so tactical, right? Sean is a tactician. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, Sean, Kent and I, we've always been a part of masterminds together and we've just built this incredible friendship. So basically the three of us put together, a business relationship together. And so what we do is I share, you know, it's basically the three of us running it. It's absolutely Sean's event. But I'll MC it and I'll present and Sean will present and Kent will present. And we're bringing in, a billionaire, Jesse Itzler, who's become a close friend of mine, Kent and Sean's. Mm-hmm. He was a co-founder of Zico Vitamin Water, Marquee Jets, which sold to Warren Buffett's company, NetJets. He's a part owner of Atlanta Hawks. We're going to have incredible people. Our friend Brett will be there. I think he might even be speaking. But it is unbelievable 3 days that we give all of the content for all of the systems at this event, right? And so it's called Extreme Freedom. If you just go to thescienceofflipping.com/events, you will see a video of me and Sean and we'll tell you all about it and the value there is. Tickets are selling now and it's going to be, for those of you, the people that want VIP, we're actually doing an upfront 1 day mastermind with me, Sean and Kent on Thursday, that you would be going to for the VIPs. That way they get really around the inner circle, so to speak, and get to ask us questions. And we do like a mastermind model. And so, scienceflipping.com/events, you're going to see a video of me and Sean, and we're talking about our business and why this event's so great.
And this stuff, by the way, for those of you who are listening, it's 100% worth it. Like, I mean, I know, Kent and Sean's stuff and they have great content. I feel like Kent is at every one of these events.
Absolutely. He's everywhere, man. He's
everywhere, man. It's like crazy. It's like every single event. But his content's awesome. He's got a lot of great products too. You mentioned the Find Motivated Sellers Now, right?
Yep.
Awesome product.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, that's a product that I use. I definitely endorse it. But yeah, so going to those events though, I mean, you won't leave not getting your money's worth. I mean, you guys don't even charge a lot. I mean, you know, the events are it's an insignificant amount of money.
Yep.
And you're going to get at least a few ideas at every single one of these, like for sure. And, you know, you're going to have some of the top people in the industry that are doing things that nobody else is doing. So
no doubt,
it's definitely worth it. As much as you can go to these events, it's definitely, you know, a big benefit.
What I tell people all the time when you're at one of our events, right? So we just had me, Sean, and Kent put on the Scale and Escape event. Awesome event. But it was more for people that were kind of more in our position where you might be making seven figures, but you freaking are doing everything, right? Yep. You gotta figure out how to scale your business. This event is going to be for everybody. It's going to be for the people who are like, how do I get into it? But also it's going to be a component of how to build a true business, not just how do I go get a paycheck, right? And so we're going to have all the components there. I tell people every time, go find three things that you can take home immediately and take action. Don't try to figure out how to build everything all at once.
Take it's so tough because go there, you don't get three good ideas. You get 50 good ideas.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so take notes, but find the three that you can do immediately the day you get home. Like what I'm going to tell people is this doesn't need to wait. You don't need to wait on the phone system. You can literally start today, right? You don't have to wait for direct mail to go out and the calls to come back in. You don't have to wait for anything. I'm going to start calling today, right? So it's an awesome event. Guys, I would love for you guys to go there. I appreciate you letting me just mention it on here. It's going to be killer October 20th through the 22nd here in Phoenix.
And what is the URL again? One more time.
Thescienceofflipping.com/events.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Justin, for coming on. Any last parting words for the listeners?
My pleasure. Here's what I would tell the listeners. You need to always be open-minded and a big student. To this very day, I still hire coaches. I still hire business mentors. I still
bring people
into my life that know more than me, not for huge transformation reasons, but because I always want to be pushed. I always want to get better at what I'm doing. So for all you listeners that are out there and maybe contemplating whether you're going to do Tom's coaching, do it. Because at the end of the day, you need those people involved. So that's it. I appreciate you having me on here. This has been, it's been great, dude.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening to the Real Estate Mogul Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Caffarella, and we will be back next week. Thank you.
Peace.